Hello and welcome to Health Matters on Channels Television. Thanks for staying with us. I am Mary Alale Yusuf. As at Friday, February the 26th, there were more than 113 million confirmed cases of COVID-19 globally. Almost 64 million people had recovered, and the death toll is over 2.5 million. It's exactly 1 year since the first case of COVID-19 was announced in Nigeria. Since then, there have been more than 155,000 confirmed cases. By Friday, February the 26th, more than 132,000 people had recovered and 1,902 people have died. That's little over 4,000 new infections in a week and just over 5,000 recoveries, less on both counts than last week. Recovery rate is up to about 85.5% and case fatality rate still hovering at 1.2%. Total samples tested are almost 1.5 million, but just about 48,000 within the week. Now, children are not the hardest hit by COVID-19 infections, but they risk being victims of the pandemic, biggest victims of the pandemic, because their lives are being changed in the most profound ways, whether by increased poverty, reduced access to medical care, or after effects of COVID-19 infections. My guest is a pediatrician at the Lagos University Teaching Hospital, Idiaraba, Dr. Olayonju Mokoyin.
Thank you for having me.
Nice to have you once again. Okay. We know that children don't usually get this disease, or at least we don't see them.
Most of them have minor or asymptomatic.
So it looks like they're not getting it. But if a child were to have symptoms, what would COVID-19 symptoms look like in a child?
Okay, thank you very much. So usually in children, the symptoms they present with include fever, cough, nasal congestion, catarrh, loss of taste, rash. They can have rash. They can have loss of smell. And they can have abdominal pain, diarrhea, vomiting.
Loss of smell. Okay, for a child to be able to tell you he can't smell something, who are we calling a child now? From what age to what age? Because I know a two-year-old will not tell you, "Mommy, I cannot smell it." They wouldn't think about that, would they?
Yes, maybe from like 3 years and above, we'll be able to tell you that, "Oh, I can't smell this. I can't smell your perfume."
Okay.
So they should be able to express themselves.
A child would be very aware to be thinking of such a thing, you know.
But it's been reported amongst them.
Amongst them, okay. Have you, within your practice and during this time of the pandemic, have you ever had to put any child on oxygen or a ventilator? And how does it affect the child, if yes?
So, like I said, COVID-19 infection in children has been purely asymptomatic or the milder form of the infection. So there's really no need for ICU care in that case. But children can present with pneumonia that can be severe, so not necessarily from COVID-19 infection.
UNICEF was saying, you know, in a paper that they put out October 2020, that COVID-19 could have increased the number of stillbirths. How does that happen? And has that been your experience in your practice?
So COVID-19 has direct and indirect effects. So talking about the indirect effect of COVID-19, we all know that pregnant women in the course of the pandemic had reduced access to maternal care. And this is as a result of disruptions to healthcare. Okay. Supply chains were affected, redistribution of healthcare personnel. So midwives, you know, some midwives were taken from the maternity ward to another ward to care, because a lot of healthcare personnel contracted infection, resulting in reduced number of personnel available to even care for patients, including pregnant women. Also, As a result of the pandemic, there was job losses, which could have resulted in hunger. Pregnant women are not spared malnutrition, which will also affect the growing fetus.
Yes, you know, that same paper put out by UNICEF is estimating that an additional 6.7 million children under the age of 5 could suffer from wasting due to disruption in food systems and as a result of reduced access to care during the lockdown. So just enlighten us.
So wasting is actually a form of acute malnutrition, which is basically reduction in weight of the child.
Okay.
So it is a pointer to an acute form of malnutrition. And this is expected because as a result of the pandemic, a lot of families, breadwinners, lost their jobs. And if there's reduced family income, what do you expect? There'll be reduced fund available for purchase of food, resulting in hunger and malnutrition resetting.
But 6.7 million is a big figure.
Even prior to pandemic, we had issues with malnutrition. Malnutrition was a major cause of under 5 mortality in Nigeria.
Okay.
So the pandemic worsened.
Just escalated
it.
That. Yes, it exacerbated it.
Worsened it.
So what is being done to address the situation in Nigeria?
Okay, in Nigeria, last year during the pandemic, a lot of non-governmental organizations, faith-based organizations, individuals supported the underprivileged amongst us, including children, women, you know. And I think Nigeria also supported the government, supported the poor, that's the indigent families, with conditional cash transfers. You know. So I believe that alleviated it a little bit. I don't think that was too sufficient because we've been having a lot of cases of malnutrition.
Even now.
Yes.
But you know, you mentioned last year. That makes me feel, you know, have people relented on their efforts this year to alleviate these
suffering?
Especially
when we had the lockdown. That's what I'm referring to, the lockdown.
Okay.
But a lot of individuals, faith-based organizations, non-governmental organizations, they've been supporting indigent families, including children.
Okay,
then
so,
also the school meal program too can actually be improved upon.
That's
because,
now, because they started going to school.
Yes, it can be improved upon because in some countries like Europe, a child is expected to have a free meal at school, which can at least give the nutritional requirements.
But children do have a free meal here.
I'm not sure
the
all
question
states,
is what is in that free meal.
I'm not sure all states are doing it. And it doesn't have to be. There are other ways of even achieving that school meal. Like in some places in India, they give them raw food to take home.
Oh, they do?
Yes.
Raw food to take home.
Yes.
That's a thought.
So it's not only for the child, also for the family.
Raw food, that's good. Okay, so we were also considering, we've made so much gains in the area of, you know, HIV infections. We're talking about numbers going down, people getting better. There's a cocktail of drugs now that they say almost makes your count disappear, you know. And you can't even infect another person. But that this was affected during the pandemic, especially during the lockdown.
That's expected because drug supply chains were affected, including antiretroviral medications. So it is expected that when a patient is on antiretroviral medication, there will be suppression of the viral replication, that's multiplication of the viruses, thereby keeping the viral load, that's the number of viruses in the blood, low. So if a patient who has an appointment cannot get to the hospital to collect his or her medication, then you can expect that
the virus will now overtake whatever is there.
Yes, exactly.
And start to replicate.
And there can be now resistance to the regimen that the patient is on.
Whether there's lasting effects of this. And it seems that, yes, there is. So there's even a penalty, so to speak, for not keeping to the drug regimen.
That's where adherence to the medication, that's compliance to the medication, is very important.
Okay. All right.
So, due to the pandemic, the lockdown, there was disruption to supply chains, patients even coming to the hospital. Some even missed their appointments. You know.
And that happened with immunizations, I understand.
Yes, exactly.
Now, what do you do when your children miss their immunizations and then you now see them like long after? Can you remedy the situation?
Yes, there's something called catch-up vaccination that can be that can be given to the child. So their schedule can be adjusted to include those that they've missed. We call it catch-up vaccinations.
Okay. Okay, so let's just say DPT, for example. I think 4, 6, 10 weeks, something like that. And your child has missed 4, 6, and 10 weeks and is already walking.
So by the time you see the child, you can give the first dose that was missed, then give 4 weeks appointment.
So you just take it the same way you would have taken it, except that now the child is older.
So all the vaccines that the patient's supposed to take at the time you are seen, you give, then you give another appointment.
Okay, so what if, let's hypothetically now, you know that you're going to give this child a yellow fever vaccine when he's about a year old or so, but he just took his last DPT, you know, 4 weeks before he became 1 year old. Is it going to disrupt anything? So do you now back up the vaccines, back up all the vaccines, or just back up those ones that he missed?
Like I said, as at the time I'm seeing the patient, I'll check the schedule. What are the vaccines that this patient is due for as at today? Okay. I'll give those vaccines.
All right.
And then I'll check the ones that I can still add to it. Then
that the child has missed.
Ensure that the interval that is supposed to be between those vaccines he missed is maintained.
Okay, so there's this, some children develop a condition, usually long after having COVID-19. They call it multi-system inflammatory syndrome, a mouthful. Is this a new disease? Because I only started hearing it when COVID-19 came on the scene. So is this something new or has it been with us?
Okay, so multi-system inflammatory syndrome in children was reported for the first time as far back as April 2020.
It's a new disease. That's why it makes it a new disease.
So, and it was found to be a rare disease.
Okay.
And a post-infectious state. That means it happens like 4 to 6 weeks after an exposure to COVID-19 infection.
So let me get this straight. This is a syndrome that is attached to COVID-19.
It is a post-COVID-19 infection condition.
What I'm trying to find out is, is there a multi-system inflammatory syndrome post some other disease that is not COVID?
Yes, but it's not called, it's not referred to as multi-system inflammatory syndrome.
Okay.
So we can have something similar. We can have a post-infectious reaction to a particular antigen that someone has been exposed to. So it's not, it's just terminologies that are different, but it can follow other infections.
So there's
MISC is specific to COVID-19 exposure.
And you say it's 4 to 6 weeks after the child has recovered.
Because it was found that after the peak of COVID-19 was reached, there was a lag of 3 to 6 weeks before the evolution of MISC.
Okay.
So that's an evidence to support that it's a post-infectious disease.
This disease, does it happen to some children who were asymptomatic with COVID-19?
Exactly.
So the parents didn't even know he had COVID-19?
Yes, yes. And the only evidence that we can have in that case is an antibody test to COVID-19. So at that time, a positive reverse transcriptase polymerase chain reaction test might be negative. So what we have then is an antibody, which is an evidence of an immune response.
COVID-19 before.
COVID-19 infection.
Okay, let's go on a quick break. We'll come back and continue this. Please stay with us. We'll be back after this. Welcome back. We're talking about COVID-19 in children. This is Health Matters on Channels Television. You can call 0808-054-2233 if you have a question about COVID-19 in children. You can also tweet at CTV_MaryA. Right now, we're talking about the MISC. Can you tell us, off the bat, it sounds like everywhere is swollen. But that's the layman's explanation. Can you tell us what this MISC looks like?
Okay, so as the name implies, multisystemic inflammatory syndrome in children. So there's affectation of more than one system or more than one organ system.
Let me make it easy. Heart, lungs, kidney, yes, liver.
Kidneys.
So many systems are involved.
System,
hematological system.
Yes,
inflammation of the blood.
Well, that's not what I mean by inflammation of the blood. But what I'm saying is that it can have affectation of all the system, the musculoskeletal system,
So
it can have affectation of the immunological system.
All right.
Yes.
Does the child have a look? Does he look odd?
Yes,
with
they look
such
odd.
A thing?
They look odd, actually. So they can have. So basically, the age is the first thing when you're describing MISC. Children less than 19 years, according to the WHO. Then, okay, according to Center for Disease Control, less than 21 years.
Okay.
Then, fever for greater than 3 days. Then, we said multisystem inflammatory syndrome. So there should be an evidence of
More than one system.
Elevated markers of inflammation, like erythrocyte sedimentation rate will be elevated, procalcitonin or C-reactive protein will be
okay,
elevated.
Okay, so the child cannot be diagnosed just by looking.
No.
You've got to do some tests.
There are some criteria that you need to make the diagnosis. So, that's what I'm trying to list. You need age of the patient, presence of fever, then affectation of the heart,
okay,
which can present as heart failure, affectation of the digestive system, which can present with abdominal pain. So they found that two systems are usually affected, basically, the abdominal, the digestive system, and the digestive system and the cardiac and the cardiovascular system. So there's affectation of the heart. And
okay,
also, they can have, you should not be able to explain the presentation of the child by any other microbial cause. And there should be demonstration of evidence of previous exposure to COVID-19 with a positive antibody test.
Okay, so let me see if I understand this.
Okay.
Microbial cause. There shouldn't be any germ or infection.
There should not be any, you should not be able to isolate any other organism that you can attribute the presentation of the child to.
Okay. Then there will be an antigen test or something like that?
Antibody test.
So antibodies must be present.
Yes.
Before
then
you can
also
classify.
They have, then two of other other features should be present, like red eyes. They can have swollen hands. So it mimics a particular condition we call Kawasaki disease.
Okay.
Yes.
Now, here's what I'm concerned about. This child, if he or she ever was in the hospital, has already gone home. Or probably never made it to the hospital because they were asymptomatic. So the person who is looking at this child is the parent or the caregiver. Red eyes can be explained away. Slight fever can be explained away. What does the caregiver see that makes them know this is really dangerous and I've got to go to the hospital?
So like I said, not just any fever, at least the fever will be greater than 38 degrees Celsius.
Would you advise all of us to have thermometers at home?
Yes.
Because of this pandemic.
It's a basic need, actually. Because in all public places, there are thermometers there. So there should be thermometers at home.
So tell us again, it should be above what?
38 degrees Celsius. Then red eyes. When you see red eyes.
Yes, red eyes is bad.
Red eyes, conjunctivitis. It's something, at least in this this period post like during this pandemic, you should it's like all the cases I've seen, they had red eyes.
All.
Yes, and fever is 100% in all of them. So fever, red eyes, swollen hands and feet, those are the things the parents can pick up at home. The other ones we have to check in the hospital, laboratory and clinical parameters.
Have scientists been able to say why this thing happens the way it does?
Actually,
gives the child 4 weeks to just feel he's okay and then attacks him.
So there's really no exact explanation for this. It's yet to be determined. But there are some hypotheses that have been postulated. And basically, the common pathway is cytokine storm, and it's due to immune dysregulation.
Okay,
so there's hyperactivity of the immunological system, hyperimmune response. So that's what's causing it.
The COVID-19 comes, and the production of immune system overreacts to it.
Yes, exactly.
Aha. And then that now affects the systems.
The other organs.
But that's a hypothesis.
Yes, that's a hypothesis.
Which means they've not proved it yet. But it makes sense. I think we're having a phone call. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Good afternoon. What's your question? Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Kufuorola.
This is Kufuorola from Aja.
You're welcome. What's your question?
Please, I want to know whether.
You need to put your TV volume off.
Okay.
Put your TV volume off.
Okay, I should put it off. Okay, I've done that.
All right, go ahead.
Okay, so I want to know if a child has a cough and the cough is persisting, maybe he doesn't cough in the daytime, but only in the night, and the cough persists. Can it be a symptom of COVID-19?
Is it productive? Does it bring up things or is it dry?
It's just a dried cough.
Okay, so I'll turn you over to the doctor to answer the question.
Okay, thank
only
you.
Only at night?
Only at night.
That's what she says.
Okay, thank you very much for the question. Cough only at night has other causes. It's not likely to be due to COVID-19. So you have to see your pediatrician for further evaluation. It could be features of allergy.
Okay.
And how old is the child?
Oh, that's true. How old is the child?
Yes. So it could be a symptom of asthma. Night and early morning coughs.
Okay. Is it because of the weather?
Night
and early morning.
Yes, weather. Yes, it's cooler at night. Yes.
Okay.
But that's what has been documented as a cough.
So how do they treat this syndrome? Can it be treated?
Yes, it can be treated. So, like I said, is hyperfunctioning of the immune system. So, basically, immune modulators, anti-inflammatories. You know, we said it's multi-system inflammatory syndrome.
Do they survive it?
Yes. They survive it, but it has the potential to cause death.
Okay, so here's the one I want to know. Does it have lasting after effects? Like something is damaged forever?
That is what is yet to be determined, because a similar condition called Kawasaki disease affects the blood supply to the heart. Okay. But it is yet to be determined, the long-term effect of MISC, since it has just evolved. So we need more data to be able to support that.
Okay, it's time to close. But at the end of the day, to avoid all this, we should wear our masks.
Physical distance.
Keep our distance. Wash our hands. Thank you so much, Dr. Mokoyen, for coming to the show.
Welcome.
Thank you for being there with us. And thanks for your questions and your calls. Have a wonderful day. I am Mary Alalayisi.